chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Greg Garrett on the show today. Greg is a senior partner and CEO of Garrett Realty Partners and the founder of Orphan Helpers. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Greg Garrett, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I have been so excited about this conversation, and you are just truly one of my favorite people.
Oh, you're awesome.
Thank you so much for making the time to be on the show. And you and I are connected, and we're going to talk about all this, but we are both in an organization called YPO, Young Presence Organization. You know, I don't want to embarrass you, but I'm going to anyway. I just want people to understand who this is that we're talking to. I mean, Greg is the founding chairman of the Young Presence Organization for the Virginia chapter. He also was the founding president of the Young Entrepreneurs Organization, which is kind of the precursor to YPO, former chairman of the World Presence Organization. My goodness, Greg, founder of Orphan Helpers. We'll talk about that. Founding member of the Core Leadership Group for Gathering of Men, a Promise Keepers type group that happens in Hampton Roads. Former chairman of the Newport News Mayor's Drug Prevention Task Force. I mean, literally, I've got pages of things here that you have been very instrumental in, either were a founder of, I've been a part of. And so, Greg, I'm really in awe. It makes me tired just reading all of this, but I know where it comes from. And I told you, when I think about you, Greg, you are so confident. You're so accomplished. But if you were sitting across the table from Greg Garrett, Greg is one of the most humble people that you will meet. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about how you grew up, and we'll kind of talk about your childhood. I know your mom and your dad, it was Kay and Ben Garrett, actually had a real estate brokerage. So this is kind of a legacy thing, but tell us a little bit about how you grew up, Greg, in Virginia, and then how you got into real estate. And let's talk about that story.
So my dad was a World War II vet. If he was alive, he would be 104. And my mom was 10 years younger. Dad had a small real estate company in the house. As I was a young boy, the downstairs guest room was the office. And my father had a drinking problem. And that really, you know, made a big difference in his life. It really diminished what he was able to do in life and what he was able to accomplish. And it also meant that for my mother was a very independent, strong woman. And she developed through that heartache of alcoholism, something she never had a problem with, but she really developed and became a pioneer in the real estate business. So when I was 5 years old, she got a real estate license. And as I look back, I realized, you know, and later in life, that my mother said, somebody's got to step up because we got to keep a roof over these two boys. And she was determined to keep our family together. And she was determined to continue to be the wife of my father, even though he was far from perfect and didn't really provide the way he should have. And eventually they moved into a small 360 square foot office. It was about 5 miles from the house. I ended up getting my real estate license when I was 19, just before my father died, at his request to help my mother in the real estate business. And that's kind of my real estate launch. But prior to that, I have come to find out that I was unhealthily independent at age 6. I thought I was just ambitious because at 6 years old, I started selling door to door. And so something inside of me said, if it's going to be, it's up to me. If it's going to, I got to make something happen. And it was kind of, I probably picked that up from my mother somehow, you know, because there weren't a lot of women in the real estate business in 1963.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So that pioneer spirit, I think I got from my mom. It's like, somebody's got to do something.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I'd read that about you. I think you had a little lawn care business or something, right?
At 6 years old, I started selling door to door. At 8 years old, I had the working wagon, which was basically my rear wagon with a broom, a mechanical edger. It wasn't electric, right?
Yeah.
And by 10 or 11, I was cutting grass in the neighborhood. And it just taught me so much. There was a Jewish man across the street. And one of the problems with my father is he was very prejudiced. I just posted something about this on my Facebook page and was very vulnerable about my upbringing and what I was taught wrongly by my father. But I started questioning things because at 10 or 11 years old, I'm cutting grass in the neighborhood. And the smallest yard I cut was Mr. Goldstein's yard across the street. And everybody else in the neighborhood, no matter how big their yard was, paid me $1 to cut their grass. Mr. Goldstein paid me $1.25. So smallest yard, paid me the most, and he was Jewish. So I started questioning. I thought Jewish people were stingy because that's what I was taught.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it started to break down these stereotypes, and it made me start questioning my father when he said racist things. Is this true? It began my journey of really hating racism.
Yeah. And I mean, you fight against that today. You know, so you started in real estate when you were 19, but so you've been doing this now for 44 years.
Pretty crazy. Pretty soon I'll know what I'm doing, right?
Well, hey, listen, every day is a new day. And, you know, I learn new things all the time, but it keeps it fun. That's for sure. Keeps you on your toes. You did end up finding your own firm. And was it always, because I know it's Garrett Realty Partners, but it used to be Greg Garrett Realty?
It was just Greg Garrett Realty. So I became the number one agent in our marketplace. So at 25 years old, I was probably not near as smart as the smart real estate people. I wasn't near as old. I wasn't near as experienced. So the one thing I knew I could do was outwork and out innovate the others. And those were the two key things that I did. I remember I had a $3,400 telephone in my $3,500 car when I was one of 30 people at 24 years old that had a phone in my car.
You got to have the right tools, Greg.
So it's like that was an innovative thing. I mean, it's like everybody has a phone. If you're 8 years old, you have a phone now. But that was an innovative thing. I hired an assistant to work with me. She just retired from our company a couple of years ago. But she helped me to start the company, but she started off just as a real estate assistant. That was something that wasn't normal. Now, big agents have assistants and a team and all this, but that wasn't the way it was back then. So out-innovated and outworked my competitors. Therefore, these wonderful, amazing 40 and 50-year-old real estate people in our marketplace just look back and all of a sudden, boom, I had passed them. One year, I moved from number 50 out of 1,000 agents in our market to number one. And the next year, I said, okay, what do I do now? It wasn't a grand vision. It wasn't a business plan. I just said, okay, I'm the number one agent. What do you do from here? You start your own company. So it was four of us, and we started our own company.
You know, one of the marks of a great leader, though, is vision. I mean, we know about that, right? We know about stratifying work, and we know about delegating and how important that is so that you could do what you're best at, right? But that's really amazing that you at that tender age that you saw that there was something inside of you. And plus you've been doing it. You've been selling since you were six.
Just natural. I don't know.
Well, I know that Garrett Realty has been incredibly successful, but let me ask you this. You've been at this for 44 years. How's your leadership changed in that 44 years, Greg?
As a young leader, one of the things that I think a lot of us struggle with is we really believe we're smart, confidence can overtake us, and we can even be unrealistically confident in certain ways. And so when I look back, I think if Greg, the leader 20 years ago, was probably closer to a benevolent dictator. So I wasn't Fidel Castro. I wasn't, you know, Idi Amin, the baby Doc Huey. you know, I cared about people, but still I knew the right thing to do. And I did the right thing best I could tell, even if it wasn't the right thing, I did what I thought was the right thing. What I have learned, which I think is very valuable for anybody as a leader, and maybe some people never get to this place, but what I have learned and the transition that I have made is to really become a consensus builder. And so that's why you ask about the name of the company. That's why we went from Greg Garrett Realty to Garrett Realty Partners, because it's not about Greg. The Garrett name means something in our marketplace. I hope it means integrity. I hope it means hard work. I hope it means results. I hope it means real estate, you know, and I think it means those kinds of things. So we kept the Garrett name, but we started elevating people within the company that had been here since they were 19, since they were, you know, had gotten out of the military, retired from the military. One gentleman that retired from the Air Force, one gentleman that retired from the Army. One of those gentlemen started with us at 59 years old and was the rookie of the year. And at 91 years old, we made him a partner.
Oh, my goodness. Incredible.
And then others that were partners in their 30s, right? And so elevating these folks that had deserved it and had earned it to partner status within the company. And that was part of that consensus building. So we now, if 65, 70% of us on the leadership team want to do something, and I'm part of the majority, it would be easy for me to say, hey, wait a minute, most of us want to do it, boom, let's do it. And now my tendency is to really probe those two or three holdouts and respect their desire to not take this action, not do it this way, and really probe, because we're going to find out how to do it better by figuring out why they don't want to do it. And together as a consensus, maybe a week later, maybe a month later, maybe never, we're going to decide how to do it differently, because we respect those others and we give people the right to speak up, and we expect everybody to speak up, because we really want to know what's in your heart and in your mind and in your intuition and in your experience, et cetera. And we blend that together and we really come up with the best possible solution, even if it's a week or two later, which sometimes is frustrating for me, but I've learned to put a lid on that frustration and say, tell me more about why you're against this when I think it's the right thing to do, and get to a place where we're going to do it better than we could have done based on the knee jerk, boom, let's go. 70% of us are ready.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about this legacy of real estate. And the cool thing about it is, which I love this kid, you've got four kids, right?
I have four born to us and then three extras that have kind of that call me dad.
Exactly. So therefore, you've got a lot of grandchildren. I know we were talking about that the other day, but I saw a Facebook post, I think, that you did with all of their names on a signpost, which I thought was so cool. I love that. I hope you left room there, because you're going to be adding some more names on there. But you got Greg Sr., you got Trent, who's out in Hollywood. We could talk about him a little bit. And then you've got Adam. And then precious Sarah Catherine. And I know Adam. I've spent some time with Adam. Such a delightful young man. Very smart young man. But now he has followed you, right? So isn't he third generation now?
He is in the company now, yes. He's married to a beautiful wife who I love dearly. And they're doing very, very well. They just bought their first home. I guess it was his second home, but their first home together.
Did he sell himself the home?
Yes, of course.
He did. Well, let me talk to you a little bit about this, because I know that there was a Wall Street Journal article that came out talking about housing. I mean, according to this article that came out from Wall Street Journal, I think it said we need 5.5 million more units. Tell me about this shortage in the housing market.
But it's actually worse than it's reported to be. In my belief is the only way we're going to solve our workforce shortage is through a positive immigration policy. So that is something that I'm predicting that Washington, the Republicans and the Democrats are finally going to get together and say very, very small, limited immigration that is done by the lottery system doesn't make sense. There are millions and millions of good people around the world that want to come here, that want to work hard. Generally speaking, first generation immigrants outwork people that were born here. And so there are people in Haiti that don't have an opportunity, the Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, there are people in Asia, there are people in the Middle East, there are millions of people that will come here, that will work hard, that will do the jobs that many people that were born here aren't even willing to do. And so if we do it on a merit-based system instead of a lottery system, And we screen those people to make sure they're not going to come in to try to commit crimes. They don't have a criminal history, right? They have some level of education. They have demonstrated that they're hard workers. I mean, if we can do that for people to get in colleges, we can do that for people to get into our country and create that. Then we will start to fill these millions of jobs that are yet unfilled. Therefore, the problem is bigger than we even know about the 5 million units that we're short. When the housing bubble burst, banks stopped lending money to developers. Builders went out of business all over the country. Developers went out of business all over the country. And then there is this no growth mindset in cities all across America. People living in a neighborhood, living in a house that used to be a forest. And there's a forest a mile away or half a mile away from them. And they say, don't cut down those trees. Don't build a neighborhood there. And they're against additional neighborhood. Well, theirs used to be a forest and now it's a neighborhood. We need more housing. We need more development. It needs to be environmentally sensitive, of course. It needs to not ruin existing neighborhoods, of course. But most new development, new housing doesn't ruin anything. The fear of what it's going to do is much worse than what it actually does. So the no growth mindset, banks not lending the money because of the bubble bursting and banks getting stuck with houses and vacant lots, et cetera, it created about a decade of getting behind in building the houses that needed to be built. And now the materials for the houses are so expensive and the labor is so expensive. There's a huge difference. It used to be resale houses were going up like this, so the bottom one, and new construction was going up like this. Well, now new construction is way above the resales. So it's going to push the resale values up, but it also makes it more difficult to build the new housing, which makes that crisis of shortage worse.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there's so much there, Greg. We could probably do a whole podcast just on that, right? But we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Greg Garrett.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So welcome, everybody, back to the Something Extra podcast with Greg Garrett. So, Greg, I'm wanting to move into something now that I am super passionate about and have seen firsthand, and I know it's been your life's work for the last 20 years. In 2000, I think you were actually looking for an anniversary cruise trip.
I was supposed to have been looking.
You were supposed to have been looking for that. Tell me what you were looking at.
Well, for me, the internet was new in 1999. I mean, it was kind of new for a lot of people, but my first searches on the internet were supposed to be for cruises. And instead, I started looking up the words orphan and orphanage. I'd been praying for 14 years about destiny, about purpose, about what I was supposed to do. And I kept going back to having my heart broken every time I saw a report on 60 Minutes about babies in Romania rocking themselves in their cribs, kids in Guatemala being shot by the police in the sewer. And it just broke my heart to hear about these stories of these kids. And so I really felt like I was supposed to do something to help orphans. And that's why I started looking it up, orphans and orphanages. I didn't have any connection to Central America, but what I found were these little countries that seemed to be kind of manageable, that I could figure out how to get in and maybe help or do something. El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, Panama, Costa Rica. I didn't know which was which and anything about them. I didn't know the differences. And when I started doing some research, and I put out a search in an organization called Entrepreneurs Organization, and found a guy down in El Salvador that said, I don't know much about orphans and orphanages, but there's a pastor that I really don't know and I really don't trust, but I think he has an orphanage. And started down the journey of going to El Salvador with my wife for our 20th wedding anniversary, instead of going on a cruise and looking for orphans. About the 7th, 8th, 10th, I don't even know how many orphanage we pulled into, we, you know, said, this is it. It was 240 kids, babies to teenagers, five adults trying to manage a place with 240 kids. There were holes in the roof big enough for five kids to crawl out of the same hole at the same time. It was a 100-year-old facility that was crumbling around them. It ended up being destroyed in an earthquake about 7 years later. And on that day, I met a boy named Julio that was 15 years old. And he was one of the older, kind of a quiet, shy kid there. And I remember telling Julio and Edwin, these two older boys there, just looking at him and speaking through an interpreter and saying, you know, God has a plan for your life. There's something you're supposed to do. 2 years from then, we never saw Edwin again. I have no idea what happened to him. Today, Julio is the director of an orphanage in El Salvador, married to a beautiful young lady and getting ready to start a family. And it's like, this is crazy how this could happen. How can this happen? And now it's just continued to grow and grow. And we're now in every single detention center in El Salvador and Honduras. We have had 900 kids. It's almost 1,000 kids that have graduated from something called our Success Academy that Greg Harris, our executive director, really created to take us to a much more sophisticated level of really doing things. And it's amazing. 50% of the kids in El Salvador and Honduras, the two murder capitals of the world where teenagers are killing each other all day long. We think we have problems in our inner city, and we do. We have serious problems, but they have much worse problems, and they're killing each other. The MS-13 and the 18th Street gang and the other gangs are just killing each other every single day. The entire society is based on revenge and what we can do to get back at what somebody else has done to us. But 50% of all incarcerated kids are in the Success Academy right now, learning about the Bible, which is multifaceted of forgiveness and kindness and love and goodness and all kinds of things, learning life skills, learning character development or job readiness. Because when they get out, the goal is they don't go back to the life of crime. They don't go back to the gang. And even though there are limited opportunities in those countries, we want them to be able to be prepared to go into some type of work so that they can earn a living and to become a productive member of society.
Well, yeah, I'm so glad you talked about the Success Academy, because you didn't have that when we went. So we went with you in 2007. And I will tell you, there are a lot of things our kids have forgotten. There's a lot of things I've forgotten in my life. We have never forgotten that trip. We've never forgotten the impact that it made on us. I mean, I remember, Greg, so we spent time in both a girls' orphanages and a boys'. And I'm telling you, what you said is so true. I mean, sometimes not working commodes. I mean, just not the greatest environment, right? And I remember, and I've told this story so many times, those boys loved soccer.
Oh, yeah. They're good, too.
And they're good. And I remember, though, Greg, them playing on concrete and oftentimes with no shoes. I also remember being able to bless them with some pizza because they get a steady diet of rice and beans.
Beans and rice.
Beans and rice. That's it. And then we brought in pizza and chicken and Pepsi. Oh, my goodness. You would have thought they, you know, it was a meal for a king. I will tell you the impact that that had on us. It won't leave us and it won't leave our children. And so I love what you're doing there. Now, let's talk about the gangs. It is infested by gangs. But what people need to understand, these kids, it's not like they are choosing necessarily to be a part of the gang. So talk about this a little bit.
That's a really, really good point that you're making. When we first started working down there in the year 2000, they were recruiting kids into the gangs at 12 years old, then 11, then 10, 9, 8. The opposing gangs are recruiting kids into the gang at 8 years old. And so when you have, for the most part, no fathers, I mean, we have fatherless issues in the United States. Of course, it's terrible. But down there, it's probably in the 90 percentile range of not having fathers in the home. So many of the young men are dead, and so many of the young men have illegally immigrated into the United States. So the ones that are left behind are very, very vulnerable. And basically, what the 8-year-old or 9-year-old kid has to make a decision, their neighborhood is controlled by a gang. So if your neighborhood is controlled by a gang, you don't have a father to back you up, your mother has multiple children and maybe is working two jobs or maybe has a drug problem herself or has some other issues, and she's not able to help you but so much, and she's really not able to protect you very much in this male-dominated society. And the gang, the 12-year-old or 14-year-old, comes to you and says, it's your time to decide. And you have to decide whether you're going to be in the gang or not when they tell you you're going to decide. And basically, you're either coming with us and you will be one of us and we will protect you and your sister and your mother and your grandmother, or you, your sister, your mother and your grandmother will not be protected, because if you're not with us, you're the enemy.
Yeah.
So I'm 8 years old. Do I have a choice?
What are you going to do?
What choice do I have?
You want to protect your mom and your sister and your grandmother.
So when we see these kids referred to as animals, which people have said have referred to these kids as animals, well, yes, they have acted out at 15 and 16 and 17 in a way that you can say, yes, they're an animal. But if you go back, it's 8-year-old kid that didn't have a choice.
We both have grandchildren that age, Greg. I cannot even imagine. Sawyer loves his mom, I'm telling you. And if you say anything about his mom, boy, he's going to come unglued, you know? And so I just put him in that and just think, my goodness. I mean, I want people to understand that it's not that they are choosing this life.
And Lisa, the cool thing is what we have been sent down there to do is to give them a way out.
Yes.
Orphan Helpers is a conveyor belt out of the gang, out of the detention center, out of a life of crime, out of a life of death. There are no gang members on the streets over 20 years old. They're in adult prison, or they're dead, or they've illegally immigrated into the United States. There's not a fourth choice except for doing something like our program, where they actually can elevate out of the gang. The gang will now release them if they work with us, if they become a Christian. That's a way out of the gang. The gang will actually let them out. When we started doing that, it was a death sentence to leave the gang, no matter what the reason was. And so we now have a conveyor belt that's respected within the governments and respected within the gangs, both, because you have to have approval in both places.
Yeah.
To be able to get these kids out and to be able to become a productive member of society.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you have figured out how to give a hand up, not a hand out. And it works. And I love this. And I know you've got stories about this, the one that you just told about this young man that's now running the orphanage. So, you know, you always call it orphans helping orphans. So many of these that have come out of the orphanage are getting life skills, and they're going back in and almost being like a surrogate dad, if you would, or a surrogate mom to these orphans. And it's just such a beautiful thing. It really is, Greg. And I know that it's not Greg Garrett, you know, I know, because you're such a faith-filled man. I know that God has given you the wisdom and put together the right team for you guys to do this. But I was telling you, I was reading the story of Jonathan's story. He was released from the detention center and has just had a beautiful life transformation. He gave his life to Jesus. He's working hard to make his dreams come true as a chef.
Other kids have gone back and become our teachers, right? I was in a coffee shop right across from a medical facility, and it was run by one of the young ladies that was in the detention center. This shop was so cool, and it was like, I just couldn't stop crying. I'm walking in this coffee shop, and it's one of our girls, and she's got her tattoos hidden, right? Because, you know, she doesn't want to show them anymore. She's not proud of them. You know, a lot of the gang members get tattoos, and so we're there, and we're going to celebrate her. This little thing that she's doing and the success of her new coffee shop, I think it had been open about 6 weeks. And she says, no, we can't celebrate me. She says, one of the boys that used to be one of our kids in the detention center that had gotten out and gotten a delivery job that she had befriended through the orphan helper relationship she had befriended, he was coming in about 30 minutes. And so all of these things that we had brought to celebrate her shop, she said, no, we're going to celebrate his birthday.
Oh.
And so here's this gang member that had committed 2 murders, but it's now in his past. And he's now working. He's out of jail. He's out of the detention center. He's working. He's doing his best. He's rebuilding his life. And he comes in, and she now gives him a surprise birthday party with the orphan helper staff that were there and me that had come in and somebody else that had come in from the United States. And this tough kid, delivery driver in his delivery driver uniform with his cap, his bicycle outside, he starts crying. And then we say, well, what's wrong? What's wrong? We're celebrating your birthday. And he says, this is the first birthday party I've ever had. The kid's like 19 or 20 years old. These are little kids. They become bad people, but they're still little kids, and they can be redeemed. And that's what we try to do.
And that's exactly what you're doing. All right. I didn't know I was going to need my tissues today. But Greg, I have to ask you, this is called Something Extra. What is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
I think one of the biggest failures of leaders is not admitting our mistakes. I think admitting and talking about our failures, talking about our mistakes, talking about our stupid decisions, talking about our misguided priorities, I think is one of the most powerful things that we can do. What is it in us that wants to brag about our successes when people will learn much more from our failures than they will our successes, right? Yes, we want to show them a positive pathway to success. I do that in my real estate company. We call it the Success Academy. We don't call it the Failure Academy. People want to succeed. But the problem is we all fail. We all fall short. We all mess up. We all do stupid things. And one of the things that we have to do is admit our stupid, admit our failures, admit our mistakes, so that people can learn from those and avoid those while they're also trying to take the steps towards success in our real estate business, in whatever it is that we do, in whatever organization we're in. But we want to hide our failures and shout to the rooftop our successes, when people will learn more from our failures and they'll trust you.
That's precisely what I was going to say, Greg. That builds trust. It does. And we know, I mean, Covey, you know, leading at the speed of trust, we know without trust, a trust culture, you have nothing. I mean, you really don't. There's not going to be any followers for a leader when there's no trust, right? So I do believe, you know, just showing your humanness. And I think when you do that too, I think you give other people hope.
Yes. Yes.
You know, that say, hey, I screwed up here. You know, I am sorry. Also saying sorry, right? Will you please forgive me? I totally messed up. So I love that. I really do. Well, tell me this, you know, what are you most excited about right now? And how can our listeners get involved? How can they find out more about Orphan Helpers if they're interested? Tell me all of that, if you would.
And certainly contact me directly or contact Orphan Helpers directly. Feel free to reach out to me. But the big exciting thing that's happening at Orphan Helpers is we're going into Guatemala. We've come close to going into Guatemala a couple of times. We haven't been able to do it. We took our first vision trip to Guatemala about 12 years ago. We've never been able to get the permission and the funding and the government and everybody all lined up. We've had some people there that said, what you're doing isn't needed, which we knew wasn't true. Finally, we are in a position that we're going into Guatemala. So that it could be, if we do it correctly, a 50% increase in the number of kids that we're reaching. And so that is the big deal. If you want to get involved in something, if you want to make a huge difference in an entire country of human beings, of good people, hardworking people, people that need a second chance, third chance, whatever chance it is, then go with us and get involved with us in our effort to go into Guatemala and do the same thing we're doing in El Salvador and Honduras. And then I don't know where we go next, maybe Nicaragua. But right now it's Guatemala, 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 and we need help.
Awesome. Well, very good. Yes, we'll have all that in the show notes, Greg. Well, hey, my friend, I appreciate you. It is so much fun to have you on the show today. And I can't wait for our listeners to learn more about you, learn more about what you're doing, and hopefully get involved.
Perfect. I look forward to seeing you. And thank you so much for this opportunity to be here with you. This has been great.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.